Welcome to Beauty as a Birthright, a podcast where we decode the evolving concept of beauty from a multidimensional lens. In this space, we embark on a journey with engaging guests from all walks of life to figure out if beauty is a birthright, then what's our legacy? So let's get started. Okay, welcome everyone back to Beauty as a Birthright. We are so excited today to have guest Sunaina with us. We cannot wait to get into this conversation. So Sunaina Madhav Dasi is a multidimensional human that holds many identities. They immigrated from Bangalore, India in 1996 and identify as a mixed race person and speaks Tamil as their mother tongue. Their yoga practice is deeply rooted in Hinduism, bhakti, and social justice, in which they create a more community-centered world that focuses on individual healing by embracing one's unique purpose. They believe that the answer is already within us when we choose self-love, accountability, and awareness. Welcome, Sunaina.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much, Paige and Tamsin. I'm really thrilled.
We're so excited to talk to you. We're very excited. So Sunaina, we start every episode by asking our guests, what is the most beautiful thing about you today?
That's a great question. I would say the most beautiful thing about me today is that I have prioritized my rest in all ways. And I just woke up from the juiciest 3-hour nap I've ever had. And I'm coming to you alive and not sleep deprived and refreshed. So that's something that I really find beauty in and joy in. Rest.
I love that. Oh my gosh. I've come to realize that in the last couple of weeks that I want more rest in my life. And I was just talking to one of our previous guests, Kyle Yoshioka, about how we're just not work people. Like, we're rest people. And we're like, we got to figure out a career where we're just lounging a lot more than working.
Absolutely. I'm a huge advocate for rest, and I teach Yoga Nidra, which is a yogic sleep class. And, you know, for me, being able to integrate yoga and rest is of paramount importance. You know, like, I really feel that when we come back to our rest, we come back to giving our ancestors what they couldn't give themselves in the moment. That's how deeply I feel moved by rest.
Yes. Wow. That's a really profound point when we think of, you know, children of immigrants and the generations and hardship and adversities that they endured, so that we can rest. So we should rest.
Yeah. It's a privilege to be able to rest and like just take time off. Well, Paige just described your whole like little bio, which is so much more than the few sentences we said. So I'm curious to know, as a multidimensional person, how has this identity shaped your evolving perception of beauty? And maybe like even as a child and like how it is today?
So that's a good question. I grew up, my mom was an eyebrow threader, and I grew up witnessing her transform people in our home. She had just a really small salon. She was like threading eyebrows and doing, you know, facials and, you know, all this organic sugaring and all of this stuff out of our house. And so as a child, my awareness of beauty was very much material. It was about the body. It was about your hair. It was about your eyebrows, all of these things, getting your nails done, right? And that was very much like what beauty was. And then as I started to grow up and find my own identity and find the ways that my body naturally exists, like the hair that grows on my legs and my armpits and, you know, being really comfortable with how I show up in the world, I realized that there's so much beauty to be witnessed, not only of the body, but also of the mind, also of the heart, also of the soul. And that I started connecting with so many unique and different reflections, so many unique and different people who showed me that it's not just about your body and how it looks in a space, but it's also about what you're offering and bringing to the table, what you're surrendering to, what you are intellectually able to hold, all of these various truths, and how beauty can exist in such a huge spectrum. You know, being a non-binary person, I find so much beauty in trans and non-binary people in general. And that has also really shaped and helped evolve how I see beauty. And nowadays I see beauty as something that's so unique. Like, you would never compare two flowers. Like, you know, like it, they're just so beautiful and unique how they are. And that's how I feel about people too.
Was there something that happened, like, where you had that reckoning that because it's like, I can see how growing up with your mom, being an eyebrow threader and like having so much place on physical beauty. And then you would think you would have some difficulty understanding that beauty it's so much more than that. And so making that transition to like, oh wait, beauty is actually much more elusive and it exists. Was there something that like led you down that path, or were you just always kind of questioning what beauty was to you?
Yeah, I think the life-changing moment for me was my mom actually left and moved back to India when I was 17 years old. And so I've been living here since for the last 10 years alone without my parents. And as an immigrant, that's really, really hard because there's so much enmeshment and codependency that happens within immigrant families and really having to rely on each other. And so I think when my mom left, I started searching for this like uppercase truth, searching for this truth that, you know, my mom had already shown me through my personal devotional practice, like through chanting and praying and kind of the religion that I had been taught from my childhood. But I went looking for it in these yoga spaces, right? And of course, everybody in these yoga spaces had this typical skinny white woman, yoga clothes aesthetic. And I was like, okay, what is it that I'm looking for? Because this isn't it, right? It's not out here. It's not in the poses. It's not in the physical body. It's inward. And then after I had been doing yoga for about 4 or 5 years, I had a really profound experience. I had an out-of-body experience during one of my meditations. And that really jump-started my journey into meditation and going inward to understand that there is this powerful, intense energy that's pulsing from my heart, from my soul. And that same energy is in every single person. It's not just in me, and it comes out differently. And so I kind of started going into this questioning of like, what is this energy? Where does it come from? And how is it related to beauty?
Wow. So the fun thing is sometimes in our podcast, it can take some time for us to like really drop in and go deep and like start to feel like we're in this really good rhythm. And I feel like for you, Sunaina, it's like been immediate. And we're so lucky. The audience is so lucky that we get to receive that.
Yeah. I got your chills.
Yeah. I'm interested to, I mean, you can share if this is too personal, but to hear about that experience with meditation. Because you mentioned how there was this beauty and vibration within yourself, and then you understood how it's in all beings. Did you have like a union with this oneness or divinity in that experience?
Yeah, I absolutely did. So I was just messing around and doing some yoga outside in my backyard. I think I had maybe flowed for maybe 2 to 3 hours. And I had done a lot of physical exercise. And then I remembered what one of my teachers had told me is that the most important posture is Shavasana, corpse pose, laying on your back and grounding your energy and releasing control of your breath, releasing control of any part, and just being one with whatever energy is coming to you. And so I have this app on my phone where you can set like a 20-minute timer and then a bell rings. And so I had just set that timer. And during this experience, I felt like, you know, my Kundalini activate and I felt a lot of energy moving. And then I specifically remember this energy oscillating between my Agnya chakra, my third eye center, and my Anahata chakra, my heart center. And it was kind of oscillating back and forth. And then it stopped for a second and it left my body, but it didn't go anywhere like to another planet or anything, you know. It was just hovering outside of my body, and it was me, but I was outside of myself and just witnessing myself in this restful posture. And it was like that, I don't know how long, like I thought I must've been in there for a few hours, you know, like that's how powerful it was for me, but you know, it only must've been 20 or 30 minutes that I was laying there. And then that alarm went off and it brought me back into reality. And I immediately felt everything contract inwards, and, you know, that awareness of, okay, my body is actually in space, lying in the grass in my backyard. That's where I am. And as I started to bring more awareness into my body, I, you know, blinked my eyes open and I sat up, and my cat had just jumped over the fence and was like wandering around the backyard. And everything was glowing. And when I say glowing, I mean like really like emanating this intense energy. And I couldn't help but just start crying in that moment because everything was so beautiful. It was so radiant. It was unlike anything I've ever experienced in my whole life. And I've never had an experience like that. And sometimes it actually inhibits me in my meditation practice because I had that experience of like wanting to try and attain it again. And so I'm still also in this place of like accepting that, like, that was an experience, and it's valid and beautiful how it was, and I don't have to recreate it or try to recreate it at every option that I can.
That's huge. I call that chasing the dragon when I see meditation students who get that high and then they're like, I want it again. I want it more. And it becomes this obsession to like get it. It's like, no, it's like in that moment, that was it. Like you may get it, but it's never going to be the same. And it's, right. And it's like chasing this dragon, this mythical creature where you only got to meet him once.
Absolutely. I love that analogy. And that also, it's a part of the, this is also a part of the practice, right? Like a parigraha, finding non-attachment to even your meditation practice, to even the levels of meditation that you may or may not attain at any given moment.
Right. And I also think of, you know, when people reach a certain level of enlightenment or freedom, liberation, whatever word they think of, sometimes there is this ego attachment too, right? This chasing the dragon, this, how can I achieve it again? And then when people get caught in that, I feel like so much is lost when they get stuck in their ego and wanting to have what they felt like was a superpower in that moment. And then it's like that magic kind of starts leaving them when that happens, when they stay in that state for too long. So yeah. And oh my gosh. Okay. Go on, Sunaina.
I was just going to say, and it impacts your self-worth as well, right? Like all of these identities, because they're so intersecting, they do affect your self-worth, because then you say, oh, maybe I'm not as good of a yoga teacher. Maybe I'm not a good of, you know, I fell off my practice for a few days this week. Maybe that's why I'm not reaching this state of being. When in reality, like for me, I believe the divine to gift us with these insights, with these experiences, out of non-attachment, right? Like I didn't receive that because I did all of this work, or even because I did 2 hours of yoga before that. I received it because it was in alignment with something that was larger than me. And I needed that alignment in order for every single moment in my life from that point into the future to progress exactly the way that it did.
Yeah, I think you hit it. It's impermanence, right? And so it's like non-attachment. It's easier for us to not be attached to things that were painful, sad, things that we're like, I'm ready to let this go. But it, at least for me in my practice, it's very hard for me to practice impermanence when it's the good stuff, the juicy, happy stuff. I want to hold on to that as long as I can. And that to me, that's my impermanence practice, learning how to let go of and not being so attached to the happy, like good feeling stuff. Mm-hmm. And that it's like the hardest thing for me, like, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Then you have to be, yeah, because you have to be present in the shadows and the hardship and the darkness to then transform and transmute it into something else. So, yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, so at the end of the day, though, we are all still a body, right? We're still a body. We inhabit a body. And so when I was looking through your social media, I came across some posts celebrating natural body hair. And it was so bomb. I was loving it.
Totally hot. But so hot.
Yes. And I wanted to know, is this just, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot to it, but how much of that is related to your relationship within the Indo-Aryan and Dravidian cultures? Do they celebrate body hair, natural body hair as well? Or is this completely independent of your heritage?
Yeah, there's so much intersectionality. I don't think anything for me could be independent of my heritage, because my heritage is such a huge part of my identity. And for me, I think about colonization and what has that done to my culture, and how have women, femmes, non-binary folks, trans folks been really adversely affected by the impact of colonization, you know, when the British came to India. And when you look at Indian fashion and the progression of Indian fashion, it starts actually with femme presenting people, AFAB people, not wearing tops, not wearing shirts. So like your breasts were exposed. And then there was just a cloth to wrap around your waist that would kind of go over your shoulder. And it was very, very open and free. But then as we kind of move deeper and deeper into patriarchy, deeper and deeper into the male gaze, into women and AFAB folks being only a means of reproduction, only a means of caring for babies, things like that, you kind of see this hypersexualization of women's bodies. And, you know, you can see this if you go to an Indian temple, right? Like, this isn't just like knowledge that I'm making up, right? Like, if you go to India and you go to these indigenous temples, all of the depictions in the temples are of gods and goddesses and people who are unclothed, right? And they are very natural. They're voluptuous. They have body hair. They are enacting sex, right? They're literally doing it. There's a whole temple that's devoted to this. And so it seems ironic for me that, like, to go to that temple and visit that temple, I have to cover my whole body. I have to cover my head in some cases, right? Mm-hmm. And I have to be super, super covered up. But in reality, like, those indigenous, like, cultures and temples worshipped this body and worship nakedness and this raw, authentic, primal nature that every single one of us has within us. And so for me, growing out my body hair was a way to reclaim that indigenous knowledge that I knew already, and not be instead another face of bleaching, right? Skin bleaching, hair removal, and how intensely that affected me. Because, you know, even being the child of an eyebrow threader, like, I, even after I grew up my leg hair, my armpit hair, everything, I found myself still getting my eyebrows done. And I had to ask myself, know, like, why am I feeling so compelled obsessively to go and get my eyebrows done? Like, I have leg hair, armpit hair. I'm like, oh, all natural, love your body the way it is. But then I'm getting my eyebrows done. And so that was like the last thing for me to, like, you know, to like release that, to really, really feel and embrace my body, my hair, even my sexuality, the way that it is.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. I think it's so fascinating that was like the last step. That makes sense though, right? Because it's so tied to your caretaker, your maternal figure, your mom. And so it makes sense to me. And then that is like the last thing. It's like cutting that cord. And it's like, now you begin your, at least when I think of face reading, it's like, that's the major transition that happens. Like, hopefully in your 30s, like, that's what you're supposed to do. It's like, cut the ties away from your mother. And so this is how you start to figure out what your original face starts to look like. Oh, so beautiful. And you know what? I was thinking when you're talking about these temples with sex, I always tell Paige, I talk about this with her too a lot. Like Chinese medicine has been so exotified and orientalized, you know, and it's like this very mythical thing now. But when you look at the classical text, the reason why we have Chinese medicine is because these people wanted to drink a lot, have really good sex, and live forever. Like if you look at the herbal formulas and the classical text, like that was the whole purpose. Like have a good time drinking and having good sex, having a lot of good sex, and then and then living forever, right?
Right.
And to me, it's like that's just so simple. It's just, you know, and now it's this weird like mesh of like, sometimes I look at Chinese medicine, like on Instagram, I'm like, I don't even know what this is. Like, it's so exotified. It's like, you don't need to exotify like that. It just, it's this simple, beautiful thing. Like, and you don't have to make it so weird and so unattainable. And
Samson, thank you for sharing that. It reminds me of an affirmation actually that I say to myself. I have it written on my mirror in the other room and it says, I choose simplicity as a daily practice. And that for me has been really transformational because, you know, this world wants to complicate everything. It wants, you are a consumer, right? Like that's all you are. You're there to consume. So whatever is going to sell for you to consume it, that's how they're going to market it and brand it and do it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be so complicated. These techniques, these practices, they're ancient and they're already whole and complete as they are. They're simple and beautiful as they are. You know, they don't need to be anything else.
Yeah. I see that as a difference between like, I'm having this like aversion for self-care stuff. Cause it's just everywhere. Like 30 day self-care, do self-care every day. I'm like, this sounds so stressful. And so what I focus more is like self, like longevity, cultivating longevity. And that to me is very simple things that people don't understand, those tiny little simple, easy things that you can do on a daily basis can really transform your life. Like you don't need, and I love like Paige, like she always talks about this. Cause like she's the founder of Yang Phase where she sells Chinese medicine tools. And Paige, you always say like, yeah, you can buy my tools, but you can also use a spoon. Like this is what it is, you know?
Yeah, on your own hands.
Yeah.
Right. I'm like,
exactly. Right. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
I want to talk about sex and beauty. I'm so excited that you want to talk about sex.
I want to talk about sex. Let's go, please. Queer sex to the top.
I know. I love this. Okay. So I'm curious to know, how do you see the intersection of sex and beauty impacting our self-worth? Has it impacted your own self-worth?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I think about sex, traditionally how we've been socialized, when even just like the word sex, it's with another person. But I always want to bring it back to understanding and knowing that the first person you have sex with, like really intimately, like know romantically, intimately, sexually, is yourself. And for many people, they don't even get there. Maybe not in this lifetime, maybe not in the next lifetime, right? Like their entire sexual experience is dictated by validation coming from another person instead of coming from themselves. And so for me, that's something that has impacted my self-worth. For a really long time, I was afraid to talk about my sexual experiences. It was definitely a shadow for me. It was like darkness. It was shamed in my family. It was something that was like, don't talk about this, don't mention it, right? Any of those things. And I was the type of kid that discovered masturbation and self-touch at a very, very young age. And, you know, after going to therapy and feeling validated by my therapist, to know that that's normal. And it's normal to discover these things at a young age. And it doesn't mean that there was like some kind of trauma that happened to me earlier, right? Because I think a lot of times when we are told no, 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 especially in South Asian cultures, like I see that so much, the shame around it, that you kind of put it in this other category, in this other box. And it does impact your self-worth, right? You see yourself as less than, or you see yourself as dirty, for being in these acts. And so for me, I think that my own self-worth in the beginning of my life was impacted because of that, because of the shame and the guilt around self-touch and pleasure. And then as I grew up and started embracing that and kind of shifting and changing and telling myself, like, you know, this is actually something that's useful because I know my body better than anybody could know my body. And so if I'm inviting someone into my space to be in union with me, to be in yoga with me, to be in sex with me, right? Like those are all the same thing to me. And it does impact your self-worth, because if you can't help someone and say, hey, this is how I'd like for you to navigate my body, navigate this temple that my soul resides in, right? There's kind of a lack of respect is how I feel. And for me, like I also identify as demisexual. So I have to have a very intense emotional connection or intellectual connection with someone in order to feel safe sexually. Mm-hmm. And so that's also been a big part of my journey that I've been exploring, because even when I was in college, I found that I couldn't really do the hookup culture in the way that everybody else was doing it. And I wasn't sure. I was like, is there something wrong with me? Right? Like, why can't I just go out and hook up with everyone? Because that's such a huge part of our culture nowadays, right? You have Tinder, you have Hinge, you have all of these different dating apps that people use to hook up and have sex. And coming from that place and kind of going through all of these layers and finding my partner, you know, and all of those things, it reminds me that our sex and our sexuality that we have first with ourselves and then with someone else, it does define our self-worth. And the affirmations that we get from other people are really important, right? Like, I also don't want to stand on a pedestal and say, well, you have to know your body first and only you can dictate that, because getting that validation and that affirmation from someone else is also definitely a huge part of my self-worth. And so like hearing that validation from my partner, hearing actual physical, you know, touch, but not physical touch, but also words, right? Hearing words of affirmation from my partner when we're having sex. That's also a huge part
of it. Mm-hmm. Could you share with our listeners what demisexual means?
Yep. Demisexual means that in order to have a sexual relationship or an intimate relationship with someone, there has to be a bridge built first of emotional or intellectual connection. And without that emotional connection first, you can't engage sexually, or you maybe don't feel comfortable to engage sexually.
Mm-hmm. Are you a demisexual, mm-hmm. Paige? Are you thinking you are? Oh my gosh, Jasmine, you really?
No, I actually had never heard that term before, or maybe I had, and I like thought I knew what it meant. And then like, as you were continuing to talk about it, that's what I was thinking that what it meant when you were sharing about like the hookup culture. But I wanted to make sure. And I'm like, there's probably some listeners that want to jump on Google, but they also want to like keep listening. And so I'm just going to ask you, for everyone else. So
this is because this is something I've been working on, like how sex impacts my self-worth and then how it impacts my beauty and trying to make that connection for myself. I mean, this is like 2 years of me just trying to figure what this means to me, because I kind of have a opposite story from you, Sunaina, where it's like it was very easy for me to hook up with people. Like I was always very sexually open. And so to me, it was more this physical pleasure that I could get. Didn't really matter. Like, I'm not like sleeping around with everyone. I mean, I got standards, but like it's something that like my body craved, right? But in the last few years, I'm realizing like that doesn't satisfy me anymore. Like I remember that moment where I was like hooking up and I was like, this is not as fun as it used to be, and trying to figure out like what is going on. And I think it's like me growing, evolving, and like realizing I need something else. And now where I am with my, and that was like maybe 10 years ago. And now where I am is like, I realized, like being sexually open, I could experience a physical pleasure, but I'm not sure if I've ever really experienced this intimacy, vulnerable pleasure. Mm. That it made me think, like, I think it has to start within myself. And so in the last 2 years is trying to figure out what does intimacy and vulnerability and pleasure and desiring myself feels like alone. Because if I can't figure it out, then how can I express this and how can I show this to my partner? And then I'm thinking like, man, imagine like sex like that. I bet that sex is really good. Like, just like, you know, it's like super intimate and vulnerable and like all of that. And just have, and I think you use the word union, right? And then you describe your body as a temple. And from a Chinese medicine perspective, I see it like I've been spending the last few years really cultivating my qi. And so as I get older, because women as we get older, it just becomes stronger and stronger if you're doing the stuff, right? And it's like all this work that I'm putting in to making this qi super refined, super good, like super juicy. And then to just give that away, because that's what happens in sex. It's like you're this exchange of qi, but also you losing that qi, you gaining that qi. And to me, when I think of it that, it's like there's something much deeper going on, and that I don't want to be given this away because it's a whole lot of hard work and it's good to any sort of experience, you know. It's like I want that good qi too back from them.
Right. I'm so happy that you brought up qi, because you know the word in Sanskritam is prana, right? Life force energy, prana, vital energy. Mm-hmm. And for me, from my yogic studies and understanding, when you have sex, it is an act of yoga and it is an act of union. And that prana that's flowing through your system, you're literally taking your Muladhara chakra, your root chakra, and you're grounding your energy with that other person. So all of the qi that you've filled up and that your other person has filled up, when you come together, it kind of dissipates, right, in between each other, and you're grounding it. But also there's something that happens even more deeply, and for me that's shown in your aura, right? Because you have this aura that is radiating through your chakra system, out of the top of your head, over your body, and it's covering you and it's protecting you. And so also, like, with this partner that you're exchanging energy with, do they also have that same intention of loving you and protecting you and giving you that same assurance that you're giving yourself every day? Because I, you know, as somebody who is polyamorous as well, I've understood how different energies can affect me, and not how everybody doesn't have that same intention, right? To protecting you with that field. And even now with my partner, I am finding that I've never had a connection that's this strong because of how emotionally vulnerable it is. But when we are together, the force field, like that's what I want to call it, you know, like the actual force field after we're intimate is so strong. I feel theirs covering mine. I feel mine covering them. And it's like we're encapsulated inside of this force field aura bubble of intensity and love. And that also, again, deeply impacts my self-worth.
You know what I was thinking too, Sanaina, is, and this is something I learned from my acupuncturist, is she was like, when you feel this urge coming on, like this sexual urge, give that energy back to our divine mother. And she was like, pick, and you know, I actually just told a patient this in the clinic this past week. I was like, I told my patient who's working through some things with her husband, what's your favorite place in Hawaii? And she named this beach. And I was like, you know, sex is actually it's a big purification process. There's pure mind, pure heart. And within colonization and the erasure of a lot of like women's rights and all of these things, it became this like dirty, nasty, like type of a ritual. And I was telling her, I'm like, no, this is actually extremely pure. And when you feel this energy, transport yourself to that favorite beach and then give that energy back to that beach. And then you kind of become one and you like join with the divinity, with the divine. And then you have this huge, like, sustainable oneness energy that then becomes a part of you. And that sensation is higher than any other type of like quick climax, quick like orgasm, like let's like get this going, like situation that you'll ever experience in your whole life. And it's because it's so pure and it's regenerative and it's like a union.
I love that. I'm here for all this. I literally am thinking about some like the one-off times where I've been intimate and afterwards there's like, I almost have an out-of-body experience, you know, like I have like super intense tingling in my fingertips and in my face. Like I have to just be still in bed. Like I can't move. I can't get up. I can't walk. I can't do anything. Yeah. I'm just like frozen, you know, having this really deeply spiritual experience.
Mm-hmm. So this also reminds me, Sunaina, because you know, we started this, I don't think we had hit record, but we congratulated you on getting engaged. And that's a huge milestone and just a really special thing. And though you mentioned in the text that you chose someone who was able to offer your heart to the divine. And I thought of how what I just shared it with my patient kind of ran a similar script a little bit. So can you share what this means when you offer another's heart to the divine?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a selflessness in finding your person. If you believe in that there's one person, like for me, it's funny that I'm engaged because I believe that you have multiple soul partners. And, you know, I am truly polyamorous to my core. And so it's funny how the whole engagement thing happened even. But I really, you know, I feel that my partner and I have so many past life connections, so much spiritual karma, if you want to call it that, between us, that needed to be dissipated. And we had to know that energy that's present between us isn't just magically there, right? Like by taking responsibility for it, that's where it's driven by the ego, I think. And I'm saying like, oh, me as Sunaina is the one that's in love with you. You know what I'm saying? And then this union that we have is like this ego union. And when you bring the divine into it, it invites another portal, another energy, knowing that something is larger than you, that we're all connected by this larger divine force that is going to help guide you. And the offering of my heart, you know, because I always joke that I wear my heart on my sleeve. Like I'm a little too open sometimes, right? And I can get hurt easily because of that. And so I felt even the first time that my partner and I had our first date, not only did they make Indian food for me, which was very, you know, very, very, ballsy, if I can use that word, right? Like you're making me Indian food on our first date. Like you better sit down. You know what I'm saying? But not only that,
was it good?
Oh, it was amazing. I wouldn't be engaged to them if it wasn't.
That's true.
But we actually sat in ceremony for about 5 hours. We completely lost track of time. And they are, you know, they practice Santeria, which is a Caribbean type of spirituality. And I'm very, very rooted and deeply, deeply practicing bhakti and Hinduism in my own lineage, which is Sri Sampradaya. And so it was interesting for us to come together and to really reflect each other spiritually and and to sit in this space. And I felt I had told them, which I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about this on the podcast, but here I am, that, you know, when we were sitting in ceremony on that first date and we were, you know, burning a bunch of things, and I was just sharing about my practices and they were sharing about theirs. And I felt a string from my heart to their heart start to connect and start to form. And I saw it in my mind's eye. And that experience is unlike any experience I've ever had in my whole life, because it was rooted in offering first before anything. And at this point, we hadn't even held hands. We had held hands to pray over the Indian food. And then we had gone directly and sat in ceremony, you know? So it was very, very spiritual. It was very grounded. And it has always, from the very beginning, centered the divine before anything else. And that looks different to everybody as well. Like, their practice is very much rooted in the earth, and that's where they see the divine. And for me, how I see the divine is very much through my guruji. And that's completely separate, right? And completely different. Mm-hmm. And yet we still have this larger energy that we're placing on the altar, along with our hearts, along with our love, and offering all of it, knowing that it's not ours, right? It's misplaced. I really believe that all longing and lusting is misplaced for the divine. It's supposed to be for the divine, but we've misplaced it. And we have, because of the ego, right? And we've said, oh, it's actually for me as Sunaina, when in reality, I like to, every time I cry too, I have this practice where I offer my tears to the divine. And I ask the divine to take my tears as an offering, as a water offering.
I love that.
Yeah.
Where did you meet?
I know. I'm like, what color was the string? Tell us everything.
Like, what app do I need to download here?
Right. You know? No, we met through some mutual friends, but of course we met through the internet ethers. It was through Instagram, actually. Classic Instagram.
About Instagram. Oh my God. That is so beautiful to think of it that way. It's like, it's really shifted, like how I perceive just dating or meeting or something, you know? It's just, heart string. That reminds me of, again, like Chinese medicine. Like, I was just thinking about this, right, Paige? I want to hear your interpretation too, because I was literally thinking about this the other day. I was thinking of one of my teachers who I love her. She is so beautiful and just like so powerful. And I remember in class, it was like dermatology class too, so I don't even know why we're talking. Maybe we're talking about the skin, but she was talking about love, what happens when two people fall in love. And she says, it's when their two Shen meets. And the Shen is this, it's the spirit that's related to the heart, but it's really complex. Like, the Shen holds a lot of our self-awareness. It's our consciousness. It's our memories. It's this beautiful spirit that is, you know, it's our self-awareness and our consciousness. And so, the heart and the fire element is really all about interpersonal relationship and this connection that we make with other people. And so she said, when you fall in love, it's the two Shens have to be at a place where they can meet each other. And that, to me, reminded me of the string that you felt in this heart. And I remember when she said this, I like bawled. I was just like, oh my God. Because I just thought that's so much more than like falling in love. It's like your consciousness meeting, and you both of you have to be in this place where you can meet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking about, again, in Chinese medicine, how, so the mind, the brain is like a yang energy, and then the heart is a yin energy, and yin is very solid. Yang is a little bit more fleeting, and yin is like substance, like it doesn't really move. And so I just thought of when you had that connection, it was like this yin connection, and you, there was actually like an object that was tangible through the mind, that joined the two. And then that union that just was so grounded and so, yeah, just grounded and real and substantial and therefore sustainable, and not this like young, fleeting, like in the mind, type of a love. So that's what I was thinking. I was like picturing, I always like think of like yin and yang, and I like saw those two and I was like, oh yeah, that makes total sense why this is, you know, where, what it is for the two of you.
I think this is a great, oh, sorry. Go.
Oh
on.
No, please, Tamsin, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, I love that you brought the yin and yang up, it, you know, about this, because for me, I felt so intensely that like, I could see that there, like whatever was coming from their heart. Cause you had asked me earlier, Paige, like what color was the heartstrings, right? Like,
yeah.
I saw a color, right? And from them coming, coming this way, theirs was a little more kind of like grounded, rooted green, like earthy green color. And then for me, coming from my heart, was like a really deep purpley red, like this, again, very like, you know, like the mud that has that kind of red color. And it reminded me, when you were talking about the yin and yang energy, how we actually wrote on a piece of paper that night, both of our ancestral lineage names of our great grandfathers and grandmothers. And we wrote it on a paper and we drew some pictures. We drew a picture of a sunflower and a bumblebee, and how the sunflower, the bumblebee is so representative of the yin and the yang, of the two different energies, the energies that are meant for each other. They're attracted there for each other. The sunflower was made for the bee, right? And the bee is there for the sunflower, and they're divinely connected in this play of life. And so I had to share that.
I'm getting chills.
I know.
I'm gonna cry. I don't wanna like
Oh my gosh. I wish we had more time. Cause we didn't even get through all the questions. Just, I love this conversation. Like, it just got so deep, so good. And I think, you know, to round it off, like, so Paige and I started this podcast because in Chinese medicine, it's all about immortality. And so, like I said, it's living forever, but that doesn't necessarily mean like, you know, you live forever on this earth. It's more about like this legacy that you're creating, that you're building while you're here. Like, what do you want to live forever after you've passed away? And so we love to end our conversation with our guests, asking them, what is the beauty legacy that you want to leave behind?
That's a really beautiful question. And I have an answer that's coming just like from my heart. You know how in the womb, as babies are being born, the heart and the tongue are connected, like when they're forming, right? And so I feel like the words that we speak, they do come from the heart, whether we're aware of them or not. And I, you know, my ADHD is flaring. Can you repeat that question one more time for me?
Yeah, it's a loaded question. That's why. It's, what is the beauty legacy that you want to leave behind?
So I want to say that the beauty legacy I'm leaving behind is not something that I actively need to leave behind, because my existence in itself is already making an imprint that is leaving it behind, because all of us are inherently beautiful, radiant, complete beings as we are, without needing to leave a legacy behind. Like, I truly believe that each one of us are infinite beings. We're infinite souls. Our energy will pervade on and on and on forever, right? Which is something that our limited minds can't even conceive and can't even conceptualize, because it's, you know, forever is such a long time. And I believe that time is cyclical. And so this beauty that lives within my soul, within your soul, Tamsin, within your soul, Paige, like that beauty is already infinite. It's already enough as it is. And you don't have to leave a legacy behind in order to know and be rooted in your beauty and your truth, because you inherently are already in that, whether your conscious mind is aware of it or not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Tamsin, I love your theatrics on that.
I'm so drama. I'm just like, oh, this is like the nourishment I need in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to like listen to this episode over and over again, and just like, I just want to like lay down and just like listen to this with my headphones and just soak in all the stuff that we talked about.
You know, during this episode in my mind, I'm like, oh shit, our podcast is so good. But mostly, Sunaina, because of you and the other guests we have on it, right? I'm like, it really, it's amazing. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Jagurdev, thank you both for being amazing hosts and co-creating this wonderful space. I truly feel so blessed and so thankful and grateful to share this space with you.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. So we'll have all your information in our show notes, but could you please tell our listeners where they can find and connect with you?
Yeah, no problem. You can find me on the gram. It's at Sunaina is my tag, SU9NAH, Sunaina. And if you would like to connect with me, you can do it there, or you can also shoot me an email if you have any other questions or concerns or want to collaborate or have me on another podcast, whatever it is. And that's just the same, SU9NAH@gmail.com. So I'm really looking forward to this newfound relationship that the three of us have. Like, three is such an amazing number. I'm here for it. And yes. I'm just feeling so complete. Like, thank you. Thank you for giving me this space.
Thank you so much. All right, Sunaina, we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, that's it for today. If you like this episode, please give us a 5-star rating, subscribe, and share it with your friends. You can follow us on Instagram at Beauty as a Birthright and say hello. If you're interested in learning more about Taoist face reading, head over to elementalarchetypes.com and follow Dr. Tamsin on Instagram at elementalarchetypes. If you like to explore beauty through your own hands, you can visit youngface.com. You may also explore Paige's Instagram at yang.face for tutorials, Chinese medicine theory, and candid thoughts on cultural appreciation.